Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 333 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing very well. Having a good week. The weather's nice. I've been outside a little bit, so I'm glad, man. I'm ready to get outside, do some stuff, not be cooped up.
You ready to meet the public?
No. No, that's not in the cards. Let's go ahead and give our Patreon shout outs. We had Aaron Matthews jump out at our highest level.
Hey, thank you, Aaron.
Heather Smith jumped out at our highest level.
Awesome, Heather.
Jessica Bryant jumped out at our highest level.
Thank you, Jessica.
We had Carolyn Simmons Croft.
Hey, how you doing, Croft?
Linnea Bethel.
Hi, Linnea.
Hillary Grace.
Hey, Hillary.
Megan Decker.
What's going on, Decker?
MJ Jenkins.
Well, thank you, MJ.
Lisa G jumped out at our highest level.
Well, what up, G?
Rhonda Shaver.
Hey, Shaver.
Linda Best.
There's Linda.
Emily Ann.
Well, thank you, Emily.
Tamara Wolgamuth.
Hey, Wolgamuth.
Tabitha Wincoop or Winecoop.
It's going to be Winecoop.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Priscilla Schweitzer.
Hey, Priscilla.
And last but not least, Nosy Rosie.
Nosy Rosie. No way.
Way. And then if we go back into the vault, this week we selected Shane McCartney.
Hey, McCartney.
And then we had a great PayPal donation from Ann Kelly.
There's
so
Ann.
We appreciate all the support that we get.
We really do.
Gibbs, right now on True Crime All the Time Unsolved, we have an episode out on Daniel Robinson. In 2021, Daniel Robinson drove away from his job site in Buckeye, Arizona. They found his car about a month later, but they never found him.
We'll talk about some fascinating things they discover when they find his vehicle.
So make sure you check that out. All right, buddy. Are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time?
Man, I am ready.
We're talking about the case of Kai McGillivray. Kai McGillivray went viral in February 2013 for beating a man with a hatchet. When, you know, this guy hit someone with his car and attacked a woman, Kai became known as the hatchet wielding hitchhiker. He was considered a hero.
He was at one point.
Yeah. But just a few months later, he was arrested for the murder of a 73-year-old man.
So he goes from a hero to a zero.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about him. You know, some people might have seen the Netflix special that they did. The thing about going viral, and he was on Jimmy Kimmel. I mean, that's how big of a deal it was.
Yeah.
You don't really know who these people are. You don't know, you know, what they're dealing with, what their past was like. And we're going to get into all of that. Because sure. a lot of people, when they talk about this case, they really point to this guy's background. And, you know, it's a major factor. Caleb Lawrence McGilvery was born in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada on September 3rd, 1988, according to the National Post. Caleb has been going by the name Kai since he was about 14, according to an interview with the news station KMPH Fox 26 News. Kai also claimed he was from Sophia, West Virginia in this interview, but as we know, this is not true. Kai said he graduated high school and studied in university for 1 year. He told the outlet that he wanted to run away from home. Kai said in a TV interview, "I don't have any family. As far as anyone I grew up with is concerned, I'm dead already," according to the National Post.
Well, sounds like maybe he didn't really have that great of a childhood.
Yeah, and we are definitely going to dive into that somewhat. But, you know, if you hear someone say, "I don't have any family. As far as anyone is concerned, I'm dead." And then you later find out they do have family. And I'm sure, you know, he had friends. And, you know, it tells you something about his state of mind.
Sure.
Right then and there, I'm on my own, man. Nobody cares about me. That's the vibe that it really gives off. After Kai's arrest, his family came forward to speak about his early life. His parents are Gil McGilvery and Shirley Stromberg. Kai also has a brother named Josh. His parents separated when he was 4 years old. They both remarried, and Kai's father had children with his second wife. Gil lost custody of Kai and his brother. He told the National Post that part of the reason he lost custody was because his car broke down on the way to a custody hearing.
Well, that would definitely suck.
Well, it would, but let's face it, the court doesn't like it when you don't show up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking even if you had a receipt for a tow truck or some...
They're not always big on excuses, even if they're valid or real or
whatever. I'm guessing there was something else in the mix, too.
I'm sure there was. I can't imagine that was the only part of it. But he still got supervised visits, and he did take, you know, his sons out. Gil told the outlet about visiting Kai at a group home for children with behavioral problems in Edmonton. During Christmas 2011, Kai came to his dad's home in Hawkesbury, where he was living with his wife and kids. Kai visited for a few days before heading west. Gil told the National Post that he and Kai had hard lives. Gil lived on what he called Skid Row in Edmonton and grew up in one of Canada's residential schools. So I had to look this up. The residential school system was a network of boarding schools for Indigenous people in Canada that was meant to isolate children from their culture and religion.
And we know how disturbing that got over the last couple of years, all the information coming out of those schools. So,
well, children were not only isolated from their families and cultures, but many of them lived in extremely poor conditions. They suffered from abuse. It was said malnutrition or starvation, as well as disease. Gil told the National Post that he was sexually abused at a residential school.
It was pretty common back in those schools from all the different documentaries that I've seen on it.
Seen a lot of documentaries on
it? Yeah, I have.
Well, I think you were alluding to it, right? Yeah. All of this information that has come out. Obviously, there was some bad stuff going on in this system. Kai has said that he was sexually abused as a child. Kai's parents and grandmother spoke with the Philadelphia Inquirer about his life. The Inquirer reported that in an interview with California radio station KSLG in March 2013, Kai said he was raped when he was 17 years old. He also said that he felt violated by a defense attorney and had fights with people he perceived as bullies. So we're getting, you know, some information from the family, a lot of information from Kai himself, because he did a number of interviews. He has said that he was sexually abused as a child and raped as a 17-year-old.
No doubt that's going to have an impact on your life.
Yeah, it definitely is. Now, is it different for everyone? Or does each person deal with it in a different way, I guess, is a better way to ask the question. I can't speak from experience, but I can only say I would think so. And, you know, this abuse is going to loom large later on in his life. Gil McGilvery told the Inquirer that Kai lived at a medical residential facility in Alberta from age 9 to 18. Kai told him that he was physically abused there. Gil told the paper, "I do believe he has post-traumatic stress." So the first thing that jumped out at me is 9 to 18. That is a long time to be living at this place.
Pretty much the bulk of your childhood.
We talked about sexual abuse. Now, you know, he's claiming there was physical abuse as well. Marianne McGilvery, Kai's grandmother, said that he had a rough childhood, but was a very good boy. Shirley Stromberg said that she never heard her son was abused in residential treatment. She also said Caleb has had issues for years. Okay. I think we have to break that one statement down.
Sure we do.
What do you mean by issues? You know, everybody has issues. The severity is different, right? For different people. The way I interpreted that statement was that his mother was saying, you know, what he did or the way he turned out wasn't because of these things that he said happened to him. That I don't know if that's what she meant, but that's the way it sounded.
It's the way I'm perceiving it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead, he's had issues for years. That's what she said. In May 2013, Kai made a post on Facebook alleging parental abuse, such as being forced to take cold showers, being hit with spoons and sticks, and experiencing prolonged timeouts. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, most of his accusations were towards a woman, self-declared mother, but he also mentioned a man. So, you know, he's being somewhat vague about who was involved, but it does sound like he's putting some of this on his mom. Now, is the man his dad? We don't know for sure.
Right.
Shirley denied these accusations in an interview with the Newark Star-Ledger, and said they were a product of Kai's mood disorders. So again, you can really see here the opposing viewpoints. Kai is saying, I was physically and sexually abused, I was mistreated, you know, all kinds of different things happened to me.
Right.
And his mom is saying, you know, he was a moody kid, he had issues, he, you know, now something landed him in this medical residential facility
for sure
from the age of 9 to 18. Now, what was that? I never really saw. Was it because his mom couldn't take care of him? He was acting out? I'm not sure. At the time of his arrest, Kai McGilvery was homeless and traveling around the U.S. However, he preferred to use the term home free. On February 1st, 2013, Kai accepted a ride from a 54-year-old man named Jet Simmons McBride. He was subsequently involved in an incident that led to him going viral online. The incident occurred around 2 p.m. that afternoon. McBride rammed his car into a Pacific Gas and Electric Company truck, trapping a worker between his car and the truck. Kai was in the vehicle at the time. He reported that McBride was making racist comments about the workers, one of whom was black. McBride then got out of his car and started beating the worker. He also attacked anyone who tried to stop him. Kai got out of the car and started hitting him with the blunt end of a hatchet, eventually knocking him out. So this is where the hero part of the story comes in.
Sure it does.
It's just a strange set of circumstances because he's riding with this guy, but obviously he doesn't know who this guy is.
Oh, or what he was going to do.
Right. Didn't know he was a racist. Didn't know that he was going to get out and start beating people. The worker who was attacked was identified in a Fresno Bee article as 37-year-old Rayshon Neely. Kai and Rayshon Neely's coworkers detained McBride during the incident. Jet McBride was arrested at the scene when he assaulted a nurse who was trying to help Neely. He was charged with attempted murder, assault with a deadly weapon, and battery. Now, those are very serious charges.
They are.
But this was also a very serious incident.
Yeah, I think the charges fit the crime.
Yeah, it sounds like they did. And this is, you know, how the world first learned of Kai, right? His story first aired on KMPH Fox 26 News in Fresno, California on February 1st. Reporter Jessup Reisbeck spoke to Kai and posted the video online. And this is the video that quickly went viral. It got millions and millions of views. Kai used colorful language to describe how he became involved in the fight. At the beginning of the interview, Kai said, "Before I say anything else, I want to say no matter what you've done, you deserve respect. Even if you make mistakes, you're lovable. And it doesn't matter your looks, skills, or age, your size, or anything. You're worthwhile. No one can ever take that away from you." So, you know, I think right off the bat, he endeared himself to a lot of people.
He sure did.
Because, you know, those are some great sentiments.
Oh, yeah.
Very true.
I think a lot of people probably felt like, I can relate.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's a good guy. He's a hero. He's saying the right things. Now, in what is probably the most viral part of the video, Kai said, "These two women are trying to help him. He runs up and he grabs one of them. Man, like a guy that big can snap a woman's neck like a pencil stick. So I fucking ran up behind him with a hatchet. Smash, smash, smash." And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have seen the video. You should go out and watch the video. He's very animated.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of infectious in a way where, like I said, I think he drew people in. Kai's story was featured on national media outlets like Jimmy Kimmel Live. I said he was on there. And not just in an interview. They did like a segment where they're riding in the car together. Not really riding, but you know, like Hollywood.
Yeah, Hollywood.
Riding in a car. I don't think there's any doubt. He was admired by a lot of people for what they saw as, you know, this really heroic act. So we shift focus to one of the victims of the attack. Rayshon Neely's right leg was shattered and his right foot was broken. Neely told the Fresno Bee he didn't hear the car approaching and was stunned by the crash. He didn't witness much of Kai beating Jet McBride. Neely said that at one point McBride approached and started pulling on his leg. He didn't know if he was trying to help. His coworkers and two nurses who were in the area came to help him. A fire crew freed him and he was taken to the hospital. Neely and his wife, Amanda, said they were grateful for Kai's help, but his coworkers and the nurses also deserved credit. So Kai ended up testifying at Jet McBride's preliminary hearing on February 21st. Rayshon Neely and Tanya Ann Baker, who was attacked by McBride, also testified. Kai testified that he was hitchhiking in Bakersfield when McBride picked him up, introduced himself as Jet, and started driving. He said they talked about religion during the drive. When they were in Fresno, McBride gave him money to buy marijuana. Kai rolled a joint. McBride smoked some of it, and he finished it.
At this point, he's being honest. He's telling everybody, look, I got some marijuana, rolled a joint, we smoked it. He's not holding back.
No, most people wouldn't lie about that because it doesn't really make you look great. Now, it also might be one of the reasons why McBride slammed into this truck. Is, you know, because he was high. He said that McBride started talking about how he traveled to the Virgin Islands and raped a young woman. Moments later, he said, "Watch this, I'm Jesus Christ," and then drove into the group of PG&E employees. Kai said that he intervened during the incident and hit McBride three times over the head with the hatchet. The first and second hits didn't stop him. But after the third hit, according to Kai, he dropped like a sack of potatoes. Yeah. Three whacks with a hatchet. The blunt end of a hatchet will do that.
Yeah, it should.
I'm surprised one and two
didn't do it.
But the third one definitely did. Now, you might be asking yourself, why does this guy have a hatchet with him? But he is home free, according to him, right? He's out on the road. He's hitchhiking. He might be using it to make camp. I don't know.
Always carry a hatchet. Just never know.
Yeah, you never know. He said that McBride got up a short time later. Kai had his car keys in his pocket and retreated. He testified that he was not going to let McBride get back in his car. Rayshon Neely testified that he was turned away and didn't see McBride's car coming. Both Tanya Baker and Rayshon testified that McBride got out of the car and tried to pull Neely off of his car. As he did this, he said, "Do you believe in Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior?" And I just found this to be such a strange interaction. He hits the man, but then, yeah, is he trying to help him? And why is he, you know, keep talking about Jesus Christ, Lord and Savior? But then obviously, you know, as we're going to find out, he got aggressive. So it's very confusing. Neely was unable to identify McBride by sight in court. He was in too much pain during the attack. Tanya Baker testified that she and her daughter tried to get McBride away from Neely. McBride used a racial slur and said that Neely's entire race have to go. She said that McBride put her in a bear hug and hit her in the back when she tried to pull him off Neely. And this is when Kai intervened.
This McBride seems like a real piece of work.
Yeah. Was he always a piece of work? Did the, you know, did he get high and that kind of exacerbated things? I really don't know. Most people that I've interacted with who, you know, are high, they're a little mellow.
Yes, very mellow.
But maybe it causes different reactions in different people.
Maybe.
Baker testified that some of the workers pinned McBride and held him until the police arrived. The Fresno Bee reported that McBride was teary-eyed in court and said out loud, "Sorry, Rayshon." So he cried in court, told this guy he was sorry. I'm sure he was sorry.
Yeah, but part of me thinks he's playing the role.
Well, and we always kind of have to discuss that. Is he really sorry, or is he sorry because of what he's now facing? And he's showing off maybe a little bit for the court, jurors, the judge, whoever it might be. PG&E employee Kenneth Simon testified that he was hit in the lower back and hip area. He suffered a chipped vertebrae. He and Neely didn't have time to move before they were hit by McBride's car because they were both facing away. He pointed out McBride in court and estimated that he was driving around 20 to 25 miles per hour. It doesn't seem like a lot, but when a car going 20 to 25 miles an hour hits you and pins you into another car, even at that speed, that's very serious.
Yeah, it's going to cause some damage.
Simon testified that McBride did not try to turn the vehicle away from them. He was thrown 10 to 15 feet when they were hit. He got up and saw that Neely was pinned with his legs under the truck and on top of the car. That's a very scary situation.
It really is. Don't want to be in that spot.
No. I was actually driving down the highway the other day to go to my daughter's dance competition, and there was some type of worker, and he was on the side of the road, and I was in the right-hand lane because I was getting ready to get off the exit, and it was just a truck sitting there, so I wasn't too worried about it, but he opened his door, and then he got out and, like, close to the traffic, opened, like, a side hatch.
Oh.
But I couldn't get over because there was a car next to me.
Sure.
And as I go by, he flipped me off and, you know, said the F word and this. And I'm like, what do you want me to do, yeah, dude? I didn't know you were getting out of your truck and I can't ram the car next to me
right. To
get over. You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust Simply Safe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. Simply Safe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. detection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. SimpliSafe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/TCAT. That's simplisafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy, or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. McBride got out of the car, approached Neely, and asked him about Jesus Christ. McBride said, "I am Jesus, and I'm here to take you home." He put his hand on Neely's head and the other hand behind his leg. Neely screamed at him to get away. Simon saw Kai hit McBride with the hatchet. They told him to leave, and Kai ran off. Simon testified that it took 4 or 5 coworkers to get McBride off Neely once he got back up after being hit with the hatchet. So we said, you know, he smoked a little bit of pot.
Sure.
Sounds like maybe he was on something else. If it took 5 guys to get him off, this is after his 3rd whack.
Yeah.
From the hatchet. Maybe he was on a little something extra.
A little something, something.
Yeah. The prosecution argued that McBride intentionally targeted Neely and that his comments about taking him home were a clear indication Neely was going to die. McBride's lawyer said that he asked Neely if he believed in Jesus, and that does not indicate an intent to kill. And I see how, you know, each side can put their own spin on that phrase.
Yeah, I can too. Not too difficult, right?
Yeah, but, you know, "I'm here to take you home." That, coupled with the racial slurs,
yeah,
and the fact that he's got this guy pinned, he's fighting him, it's kind of hard not to think that he means the first one.
Sure. "I'm here to take you home."
On February 22nd, Jet McBride was ordered to stand trial. Outside of court, his lawyer said that he was mortified and very concerned about Mr. Neely. She also said, as reported by the Fresno Bee, he told detectives that Kai grabbed his arm or the steering wheel. This was not an intentional act, and it was not motivated by race. On April 4th, 2013, Jet McBride pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. After Kai went viral, he continued traveling the country. It was said that fans allowed him to stay in their home. They loved him.
Well, he had that personality.
Yeah, yeah. He did. He had a very infectious personality. You know, if you watch some of the videos, especially the one that went really viral where he's being interviewed, it really comes off as kind of surfer dude meets, I don't even know what. He's laid back. He's using, you know, this kind of slang and... But he's also saying these really positive things, like we mentioned earlier. On May 16th, Vice published an interview with Kai where He talked about his background and what he had been doing recently. So this guy blew up, right? That's kind of what happens a lot of times when something goes viral. Well, people want to do interviews with you. They want to know more about you. They want to find out what you're doing now. Kai claimed that he was raised in a fundamentalist Christian cult. He left to live on a reservation, and that was where he earned the name Kai. He said that he had spent the past 2 years of his life living in sailboats, houseboats, going out surfing on islands, hopping in cars with people I didn't know, and traveling the country, jumping off cliffs into lakes, going to music festivals, playing music in parks, just random, spontaneous, awesome all the time. That's what he said.
Awesome all the time. Well, it does kind of sound like, well, it does sound fun.
Well, it sounds like a life with no responsibility.
Yeah.
And you're just out doing, you know, things that you want to do, and people are giving you things. They're putting you up. Kai also talked about his travels and how his home-free message had reached others. But then in May 2013, Kai made the news for a different reason. He was charged with murder. On May 13th of that year, 73-year-old Joseph Galfi Jr., a lawyer from Clark, New Jersey, was found dead in his home. Galfi was a partner in the law firm of Kachansky, Barron, and Galfi in Rahway, New Jersey. Galfi was also the attorney for the Greenbrook Land Use Board and a member of the Clark Chamber of Commerce. One of Galfi's acquaintances told the Star-Ledger that his clients trusted him. He said that he was just a regular guy. One neighbor reported that he had lived in his house for 15 or 20 years and kept to himself. This neighbor also said that he shared the house with another man, but he died several years before Galfi. So what happened was that the police went to this guy's house to do a welfare check because he didn't show up for work that Monday and he wasn't answering his phone. There were no signs of forced entry or any evidence that anything was taken from the home. Galfi was found lying in bed, wearing only his underwear and sock.
So this guy's a partner in a law firm. If he doesn't show up to work, it's going to raise some concerns, right? Maybe he has some client meetings. Maybe he's due in court.
But somebody would probably have a record of that.
Sure.
And then I think when, you know, he doesn't call and then he doesn't answer his phone. You know, this is not a teenager who makes the decision to blow off a shift at Taco Bell.
No.
Or you with some of your lame excuses that you used to have. Oh, I'm going to be late. I can't make it in today. My cat's got ringworm. I don't know. You had all kinds of strange.
They know. I was a very respectable employee.
You were respectable, all right. An autopsy determined that Galfi died of blunt force trauma. He was found in a pool of blood. He had fractures to his face, broken ribs, and a broken neck, according to the Star-Ledger.
Yeah, those are some rough injuries.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you go through that list, yes, you can use the term blunt force trauma. But when you think about fractures to the face, broken ribs, and a broken neck, man, it really adds to it. This was a vicious attack. Kai McGilvery was arrested on the evening of May 16th, 2013, at a Greyhound bus terminal in Philadelphia. Union County, New Jersey prosecutor Theodore Romankow announced the arrest hours after he told reporters that Kai was wanted for murder. So it didn't take long for them to figure this out. He was arrested 3 days after Galfi was found dead. Officials said that Kai and Galfi had a chance meeting at Times Square in New York City on Saturday, May 11th. Kai spent the night at Galfi's home in Clark, New Jersey, about 20 miles west of New York City. The next day, Galfi drove Kai to a train station and he took a train to Asbury Park, New Jersey. They texted throughout the day. Galfi picked him up at the train station in the evening, and they returned to his home for a second night. And then officials said that Galfie was killed sometime on Sunday, May the 12th. It was said that Kai turned up at a restaurant and Clark late on the 12th. The prosecutor said that after the killing, Kai called a woman and asked her to pick him up, but she couldn't. He took a train to Asbury Park and he and the woman ate lunch together on the 13th. They spent the day in Philadelphia, then went to her hometown of Glassboro, New Jersey. She wanted Kai to stay in her home, but her family resisted, so she called another woman who allowed Kai to stay in her home in Glassboro. The next day, Kai left Philadelphia and indicated that he was going to Georgia.
So really, think about it. He was a hero 3.5 months ago.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing that really got me about this story. This guy went from no one really knowing who he was to a lot of people knowing who he was and, you know, maybe admiring him for what he did, calling him a hero, to people saying that he was a murderer in the span of about 3 months or so. Very quickly.
Very quickly.
But the other thing that jumped out at me was that, you know, it did seem as though he either had a network of people who, you know, were willing to take him in. I don't know how much of that came because of his, you know, 15 minutes of fame. I don't know.
I'm going to guess it played a good role.
Probably played a pretty big part.
Yeah.
Because like even, you know, this woman that they talked about, I don't know how well they knew each other, if they had known each other for some time, or the meeting and the invitation to stay all night resulted from the fact that this guy was, you know, kind of famous at the time.
Oh, yeah. You get invited over to people's house all the time.
I don't go.
But you get invited.
I do get invited.
Yeah.
It was said that Kai cut his hair before he was arrested, and he posted a picture of himself on Facebook. And, you know, if you look at that interview that he's in, he's got like a lot of hair.
Yeah, he's got long, at least down.
Flowing.
Yeah.
Locks.
Down to his shoulders, maybe a little bit longer.
It's kind of hard to tell because I think he has it pulled up in something in that video. But
things that we can't do with our hair.
It does seem strange to me when somebody makes such a radical change in appearance after something happens in between the time before they're ultimately arrested.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Does it mean that they don't want to be recognized? They're trying to change their appearance, or, you know, is it just a coincidence and he got tired of having that long hair? I don't know.
Yeah. I think it was done on purpose, but that's just me.
It seems that way.
Yeah.
Right. Obviously that hair took a little bit to grow out.
Well, you know, we value hair here.
We do.
So
any those of us who are follically challenged,
yes,
we value hair a great deal. To me, it just seemed like it was part of his image. So the fact that he cut it really kind of means a lot. On May 14th, Kai posted on Facebook alleging that he was raped in a stranger's house. There are some very graphic descriptions in the following quote. He wrote, "What would you do if you woke up with a groggy head, metallic taste in your mouth, in a stranger's house, walked to the mirror and seen cum dripping from the side of your face, from your mouth, and started retching, realizing that someone had drugged, raped, and blown their load in you? What would you do?" Okay, he posted this on Facebook.
That'd be rough.
That would be very rough if he experienced what he wrote in this Facebook post. Now, I think it's a big part of this case, right? Did this happen the way that he says it did, or did it not? We'll talk about it more, you know, obviously in the trial and things like that. After Kai was announced as a suspect, the authorities were flooded with calls from around the country, according to the prosecutor. One man called and reported that his neighbor said she dropped Kai off at a train station in New Jersey earlier that day. Then a call came in reporting that a Starbucks employee in Philadelphia just saw a man that looked like Kai. He was later found at the bus terminal and arrested. The prosecutor said that authorities weren't sure of a possible motive, but investigators believed the two men had a sexual relationship. And the prosecutor came out and pretty much said it. He dismissed Kai's Facebook post, saying it was pretty much self-serving, according to the Toronto Star. So he's not really mincing words. He's saying, you know, what he wrote isn't true.
Right.
He wrote it because he is trying to
set up.
Yeah. Kind of set up what would later become his defense. According to a 2016 article by the Star Ledger, Kai said in a recorded statement after his arrest that at Galfie's home, he drank several beers and ate food that he believes was drugged. He passed out and woke up on the floor. Galfie was pulling down his pants. He pushed Galfie away, and then he passed out again. Then he woke up with a metallic taste in his mouth and semen on his face. He said that he hit Galfie. During the statement, Kai seemed surprised to hear that Galfie was dead. So not too hard to see what both sides are setting up for at trial, right? The prosecution is going to come out and say, sexual relationship gone wrong, something happened, Kai killed this man. Kai's defense is going to be that he was protecting himself. He'd been drugged, he'd been raped, and he hit this guy, but he didn't know that he killed him. A court official said that Kai had a U.S. Immigrations and Customs Enforcement detainer for three arrests in Canada. Spokesman Harold Orr told the AP on May 17th that ICE lodged a detainer against Kai, saying once charges are fully adjudicated, he will be turned over to ICE and placed in removal proceedings.
So Canada wants this guy.
Yeah, it sounds like he, you know, had done some stuff there. They wanted to possibly prosecute him as well. After Kai's arrest, Jet McBride's lawyer alleged that McBride said it was Kai who moved the steering wheel towards the PG&E workers.
True or not, that's a good way to come out for your client.
Yeah, and maybe McBride said that. Is it true? Is it not true? I don't know that the murder charge or the thought that he murdered this man means that he had anything to do with the accident, but it does cloud things maybe a little bit. And it sounds like maybe that's what the attorney is trying to do, right? Cloud things up a little. On May 30th, 2013, Kai was extradited to New Jersey. He thanked his supporters during the walk from the courthouse to the jail. USA Today reported that when a reporter referenced the Facebook post and asked if what happened was self-defense, Kai said, "What do you think?" On the morning of July 17th, Kai was sent to the hospital for treatment of self-inflicted but non-life-threatening injuries. One of Kai's supporters told the Star Ledger that he had talked to other supporters who reported that Kai was in good spirits. It was said that supporters had raised over $2,000 for him. So he had a lot of people in his corner.
Yeah, he had a lot of supporters that believed in him.
And, you know, it is kind of hard when you watch that interview online. You know, you see this affable, what seems to be kind of a carefree guy. So it's hard to kind of put that together with somebody who would murder, you know, a man in his 70s. Now, we know people are capable of all kinds of things. But my thought is his supporters couldn't square it. They thought that what he said was true, that he was defending himself.
Yeah.
You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Jett McBride's trial started on December 10th, 2013. Kai was not a witness at his trial, but the court heard his testimony from the preliminary hearing. The Fresno Bee reported that McBride testified that he thought he was Jesus and never intended to hurt anyone. When he put his hands on Rayshon Neely, he was trying to heal him. He claimed that he didn't intentionally drive into the workers. He lost consciousness for a few seconds after Kai punched him in the face and took command of the wheel. So my thought is, you know, like we said, all of this happens in like a 3-month span of time. McBride hadn't even gone to trial yet. But this guy who was with you is getting ready to go on trial for murder.
Yeah.
So now he punched me in the face. He took command of the wheel. Now, I'm not saying it happened or didn't happen. We weren't there. What I am saying is it seems to me as though many more people might possibly believe that.
Right.
After that person, you know, is charged with murder.
It certainly allows you to have a better defense.
Right. Rather than trying to pin it on this guy who everybody seems to love.
Right.
Because he stepped in and he was a hero. Well, he's not a hero anymore. He's been charged with murder.
Right.
Prosecutor Becky Gong told the jury that they had to decide if McBride intentionally drove towards the workers with the intent to kill someone. On January 6, 2014, Jett McBride was found not guilty of attempted murder and battery, but was convicted of assault with a deadly weapon. Jurors still had to deliberate on whether or not McBride was not guilty by reason of insanity, which would determine his sentencing. On the very same day, Kai pleaded not guilty at his arraignment. Like, this is going on like simultaneously. Yeah,
same time there.
On January 16th, a jury found that Jett McBride was legally insane when he hit the PG&E employees. Three doctors all said that McBride suffered a psychotic episode during the incident. Doctors testified that McBride believed he influenced events such as the resignation of Hillary Clinton and Pope Benedict XVI, and that he believed the government was tracking him. His attorney told the court that he suffers from bipolar manic disorder and did not intend to hurt anyone. So, you know, we don't have every tidbit from McBride's trial.
We don't.
But you did have three doctors all kind of saying the same thing. I'm sure that was big for the jury. Whatever else was introduced, you know, at the end of the day, they came to the conclusion that he was legally insane at the time this all happened. On February 20th, 2014, Jett McBride was sentenced up to 9 years at Atascadero State Hospital. If he was still considered dangerous after 9 years, prosecutors could petition to keep him confined longer.
I mean, as long as he gets things straightened out, it's a pretty good deal for him.
Yeah, you mean gets the help he needs?
Yeah.
If he, you know, really is having the mental issues that he said he had. And it's 9 years guaranteed. You know, I don't have any problem with that.
No.
Now, the ones that I have a problem with that we've done, and maybe they're older cases where someone was found legally insane at the time that they killed someone, they get out in like 3 months because the hospital says they're all better.
Right.
That's tough to swallow.
It really is.
And even tougher if you're the family. I get it. The person might have been sick. Doctors are saying they were sick at the time, but now they're all better in 3 months and, you know, they're free. That's tough when that happens.
Yeah. I think there needs to be a better balance with that.
Well, and I think there probably is today. I mean, I do think a lot of the ones I'm referencing happened, you know, years and years ago. While Jett McBride went to trial less than a year after the assault, it would take several more years for Kai to go to trial for murder. In 2015, his supporters posted a letter that he wrote to Governor Chris Christie that stated, "How can I be expected to prove my innocence when the prosecutor gets rid of any evidence I could use to show I was defending myself from a drug-facilitated sexual assault? The Union County Prosecutor's Office seems to think because I'm an indigent illegal immigrant from Canada, they can violate my procedural rights without consequence. This is an outrage." This letter was posted online as part of a petition seeking Kai's release. So again, still has a lot of supporters, people backing him.
He's got that fame behind him, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he didn't have that, he wouldn't have the support.
Well, no, because people wouldn't know who he was.
Right.
Kai requested help with this case and claimed that law enforcement failed to use a rape kit and did not collect samples for toxicological analysis. He said they failed to collect many items that could have been used to drug me from the house or samples from the carpet where they knew the assault occurred. What items that were collected were rinsed with fresh water while testing for fingerprints without ever once testing for DNA or drug residue. I don't know why people would be rinsing things with water, but
I don't either.
Why is that necessary in the fingerprint testing process? Maybe I'm not very knowledgeable about how fingerprints work, but I don't think in any show or movie I've ever seen them rinse something with water before trying to take fingerprints.
At least the ones I've given.
Yes.
I haven't.
There's been no water involved.
No water involved.
And over the years, I'm sure you've gone through all the changes from the, you know, the put your thumb on the ink pad and roll it to probably now, what do you do lately? Digital?
Digital, yeah.
They've probably gone digital.
Yeah. Very interesting.
What I will say is if there's a database out there, you're in it for all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
DNA, fingerprints, hair samples.
I'm a giver.
You're a giver, that's for sure. In 2016, Kai filed lawsuits in state and federal court. He claimed that he was never examined for sexual assault, even though he told the police he was assaulted after he was arrested. He claimed his right to due process was violated through destruction of evidence and failure to collect evidence. The suit stated that authorities ignored statements from two witnesses who said Kai appeared under the influence of drugs on May 12th, and these statements were not presented to the grand jury. The suit also stated that semen was found on Galfie's underwear, but the prosecutor told the grand jury no semen was found.
So we have some conflicting information.
But don't we always?
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
The prosecution says one thing, the defense is saying something else, and pretty much they always contradict each other. That's kind of how, you know, most trials work. What I will say is by 2016, much of the online support for Kai had decreased. There was even an article by the Star Ledger that kind of, you know, talked all about that. Shirley Stromberg told the outlet that she was astonished at how long Kai was awaiting trial. The prosecutor's office declined to comment on why the case had not yet gone to trial. And it does seem like a long time, right? We're 3 years on.
Yeah.
He still hasn't gone to trial. On March 27, 2017, Kai's defense attorney said that he was acting in self-defense against a sexual assault at a hearing on a motion to dismiss the case. Defense attorney John Saito argued that prosecutors presented evidence to the grand jury that was not relevant and prejudicial, and prosecutors failed to present evidence supporting Kai's self-defense claim.
So the game is still being played.
Yeah, I don't think the game ever stops until, you know, everything's exhausted. Now, what I will say is that I found this last statement a little strange, right? Prosecutors failed to present evidence supporting Kai's self-defense claim. Why would the prosecution present evidence that makes him look not guilty? Now, if they have evidence and they don't disclose it to the defense team, That's something, right? That's a Brady violation.
Yeah, it's a problem.
But it sounds like he's saying they didn't bring certain things up in court. But why would they? The defense should be bringing.
Yeah, that's the defense job.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure if they were really saying that the prosecution withheld evidence, because that obviously is a big deal. Saito said that the police found evidence that Galfi viewed websites with adult content, had passwords for websites on his computer, and had contact information for young men. There was evidence of sexual activity at the house. Saito said Kai was fending off a sexual assault, and that information was never presented to a grand jury. Assistant prosecutor Scott Peterson said there was no evidence suggesting a struggle at the house. So here again, I got a little bit confused. They found evidence that this guy viewed adult websites. Okay. That in no way seems to be evidence that a sexual assault occurred.
No.
The fact that he had passwords for websites on his computer or had contact information for young men. None of those three, to me, seem to be evidence that a sexual assault occurred. But it sounds like the defense attorney is saying that it was, and it should have been presented to a grand jury.
Yeah, I don't know about that. You know, I mean, the guy watching porn, as long as it's not illegal porn, right? Okay. Meaning he's an older guy. So if he's chatting it up or looking at things with young men, not boys.
Right. Men, and what do we mean by young men? Right? 20s.
So still legal.
That's all legal.
There was evidence of sexual activity at the house. Again, that's not illegal.
Well, and it doesn't absolutely mean sexual assault. So, right. Yeah, I was a little confused about the defense's claim that all of this was evidence. Saito also said that prosecutors told a grand jury about a printed list of sex offenders found in Kai's duffel bag, and they made him out to be a vigilante seeking out sexual predators. Okay, so I'll say the same thing. Even if this guy did have a printed list of sex offenders, does it mean that he's, you know, going around killing them? No. I do think it's a little strange to have a printed list of sex offenders in the area, but.
Well, you know, Kai said he was abused as a kid and late teenager, right? 17.
Would he have a list possibly of people to stay away from?
Maybe.
You could make that argument. But I think I just want to kind of say the same thing about both sides. To me, you can make it into evidence, but it doesn't seem to prove what they're saying that it proves. I'm not seeing it that way. Kai's trial finally began with opening statements on April 9th, 2019. And I don't think there's any doubt about it. The main issue at trial was Kai's self-defense claim. It wasn't in doubt that he hit this guy. I think what was in doubt was why, in the context of, you know, what happened. Kai maintained that he acted in self-defense after he was assaulted twice. Prosecutors argued that Kai admitted his involvement and attempted to flee the state. The defense pointed out the mishandling of evidence in the case. Four law enforcement officers testified about how they secured the scene and collected and stored evidence. The defense focused on evidence that was not collected, such as pills found in the fridge, blood-stained carpet, and a glass in the dishwasher.
So it sounds like the defense is kind of circling around the something was put in the drink.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what they, you know, were thinking. He was drugged, and then he was sexually assaulted. Kai testified on April 17th, 2019, and the Star Ledger reported on his testimony. Kai said that he and Galfi met in front of the Red Lobster in Times Square. Galfi drove him to his home to spend the night. At the house, they ate dinner and had some drinks before they went to sleep in separate rooms. And then Kai said he woke up with a metallic taste and bodily fluids in his mouth. The next day, Galfi drove Kai to the Rahway train station. He contacted Galfi again that night when he had nowhere else to go. Galfi brought him back to his house. He poured a beer for Kai into a glass out of view. This is all according to Kai. The next thing Kai remembered was waking up and finding that his pants were pulled down and Galfie was on top of him. He pushed him away and Galfie slammed into the ground and started grinding and humping him. Kai started hitting, punching, and kicking him while Galfie attempted to perform oral sex on him. Kai testified, "He was suffocating me. I thought he was going to kill me." So, you know, I do think there's a couple of things here to talk about. Number one, I don't want to treat Kai any differently than I would treat a woman.
Sure.
Who said, "This is what happened to me."
Right.
Because I do think it's very dangerous to, you know, automatically dismiss anyone's claims that they were sexually assaulted. What I did find a little bit strange was that he woke up after a night where he felt he was assaulted, let this guy take him to the train station, and then came back again that night.
That's exactly what I was thinking. You know, if you wake up and you have that taste and you know that something occurred and you allow him to take you where you want to go, and by your own choice, return to where you say you were assaulted, it makes you scratch your head, right?
It does. Now, it doesn't mean if you did do that, you deserve to be assaulted again.
Absolutely not.
I'm not saying that.
No. Yeah.
What I'm saying, and I know you're not saying that either, what I am saying is it does seem like a very strange decision to make.
Why put yourself in that position, right? If you need a place to stay, why not just go somewhere else? Because we know that he was used to being on the road.
Yes.
Home free.
As he called it.
Yeah, so why not just find a different place instead of going back to this guy's house?
And then the other thing that I think kind of caught my attention that we probably should talk about was that, you know, this guy was 70-some years old. Now, I'm not saying 70-some-year-old guys aren't strong and couldn't overpower a 20-something-year-old. But normally you would think the odds would favor, you know, a young guy in his 20s, right? We lose muscle. We lose strength as we get older. But if he was drugged, as he claimed he was, sure, then you have to factor that in as well. Kai said he hit Galfie and ran away. He said he must have blacked out and didn't remember changing clothes or leaving the home. He testified that he came to in a parking lot and went to a diner in Clark. He threw his phone out because, according to him, it smelled like urine because he urinated in his pants during the alleged assault. He had a flashback of Galfie on top of him. But the prosecution pointed out that while Kai was at the diner, he took pictures with fans. The prosecution also played phone conversations with his friend Kim Burns. Kai said that he told Burns he was date raped when she picked him up. He lied and said he contacted the police, but he didn't because he feared deportation. Kai said he didn't realize Galfie was dead and planned to confront him the next day. So a couple of things here. He threw out his phone. According to him, because he urinated on it.
Right.
Now, if you're the prosecution, you would argue that he threw it out because he didn't want to be tracked or didn't want the police to find him. And then, you know, this kind of revelation that he's at the diner taking pictures with his fans. Well, what does that mean?
Well, must not be that traumatized.
I think you could make that argument. I think the prosecution would make that argument. The defense would probably come back and say, you know, he was just trying to be as normal as possible, not upset his fans or, you know, whatever. Or that it just doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean that he wasn't assaulted. The prosecution pointed out that Kai's testimony was different from his statement back in 2013. Kai accused prosecutors of lying, infringing on his Sixth Amendment rights, and not allowing him to provide context. You know, and that's one of the things in trials that, you know, you notice a lot. Just answer the question, just yes or no question. They don't want you to go on and provide context.
No, keep it short and simple.
Yeah, because they don't want you to try to explain things away. They're asking questions in a very certain way to try to paint you in a corner. One of the star witnesses at trial was Junaid Sheikh from the Division of the County Medical Examiner. He testified that Galfi had serious blunt force injuries to his face, neck, chest, and arms, which were inconsistent with self-defense. And we kind of laid out those injuries and said they sounded like a very brutal attack.
Yeah.
Now, what does self-defense mean?
Well, that's going to vary from court to court, right?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, does it mean you're only allowed to hit someone hard enough to allow you to escape? Or does it mean you can incapacitate that? I don't know. And like you said, it may vary by jurisdiction.
For me, it means I got to do whatever I have to do to feel like I'm no longer in danger.
Yes. And I would say most people would say that, but I think there's an argument to be made. The prosecution can make an argument that this was much more than self-defense. You didn't have to beat this man this many times, this hard, inflict these many injuries for you to feel safe and get away. You killed him.
Right.
As we mentioned previously, Galfi was found in a pool of blood with fractures to his face. He had broken ribs and a broken neck. Prosecutors said his injuries were so far from self-defense, it's not even funny, according to the Star Ledger. Well, first of all, none of this is funny.
No, never.
So that seems like a strange statement to make. Prosecutors also argued that Kai had no visible injuries at the diner, and his behavior did not reflect someone who had been sexually assaulted. Again, for me, there's a little bit of a gray area there.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Whenever you start to talk about how someone should or shouldn't act in the wake of X,
right?
You know, whether it's the death of a loved one or, you know, being sexually assaulted, is everyone going to react or act the same way? And my thought is no.
No, of course not.
But I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to say that a man who had just gone through what Kai said he went through wouldn't be at the diner, you know, laughing and taking pictures with fans. That's what they're trying to get across.
Right, yeah.
Now, whether that is right or wrong, you know, that's all up to the jury. You know, how do they weigh all this stuff? What does it mean to them? Because really, at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, we can talk about it, but it's what the jury makes of all of it together, not one piece, right? The testimony from both sides in totality. In his closing argument, John Saito told jurors that Galfi's death couldn't have been first-degree murder because there was no struggle and important pieces of evidence were not tested. So that's a strange statement. You know, he's saying, the defense attorney saying, there was no struggle. Maybe he's leaning into the prosecution a little bit to try to say it can't be first degree.
Yeah, trying to get a lesser murder charge.
Well, it sounds like that. I'm not saying the guy gave up, but maybe he's hedging his bets. It's not looking good. So let's go this route. The state argued that Kai returned to Galfi's house after the first sexual assault. They also pointed out differences between his statements. And we talked about, you know, both of those things. But you know they're going to hammer him again in closing arguments. And I'll be honest with you, I think if I was on the jury, this returning to the scene.
Yeah, could be a problem.
Is going to be hard to square. Why would you do that? On April 24th, 2019, Kai McGilvery was found guilty of first degree murder. After the verdict, the Kai the Hitchhiker legal support page on Facebook posted that an appeal would be filed as soon as possible. Kai called his attorney, John Saito, ineffective and claimed he had been documenting proof of misconduct, abuse of discretion, and ineffectiveness of defense counsel.
Shocker.
According to NJ.com. Yeah. I mean, we hear that all the time, right? Once you lose, once you're found guilty, then your lawyer is a POS.
Sure.
I mean, that's basically almost a given. It's like what you have to do.
Yeah, but maybe his own lawyer at that time said, yeah, sorry, kid, I couldn't get you off. Make this statement and get another attorney.
Well, and we've seen in certain documentaries where attorneys have said, as bad as it is for me, you're going to have to do this.
Right.
Because it's just part of the process.
It's your next step.
It's your next step. On May 30th, 2019, Kai was sentenced to 57 years in prison. His appeal was rejected on August 4th, 2021. The appeals court stated that Galfie's injuries were the result of far more than just an effort to thwart a sexual advance, and the record does not suggest a miscarriage of justice occurred. On January 10th, 2023, Netflix released a documentary titled The Hatchet-Wielding Hitchhiker about the case. Before the documentary premiered, Kai reached out to The Tab and accused Netflix of exploiting him. He said in an email to the outlet, "So, Netflix is making a movie about my life story before I was arrested, but they refused to pay me anything for it. If someone made a movie about O.J. Simpson's football career, you'd better believe he'd be making bank off of it. Guys who kill and rape women get money for their pre-arrest fame, but I saved women from being killed and allegedly killed a rapist. So Netflix is ruthlessly exploiting me. What the fuck?" That was his statement.
Like he's a little sour about all this.
I think he's sour about a lot of things. Being in prison, probably number one. And then this documentary comes out, and this statement seems to be more about the fact that they're not paying him.
Yeah. Not about I was accused wrongfully or...
Yeah, and maybe I'm sure he made those statements in other places, yeah. But this one just makes it sound like he's peeved because they didn't pay him. Yeah.
Show me the money.
Yeah, show me the money. But, you know, Netflix also did one on Aaron Hernandez.
They did.
The football player.
Yeah.
I'm sure they didn't pay Aaron Hernandez.
No, I doubt it.
Why would they?
Yeah.
You don't pay killers to do a documentary about them.
Obviously, they would like that, but...
Yeah, I mean, maybe if you were to interview them, I guess sometimes people pay a fee, but even most journalists won't do that because they find it trashy.
I think some of the state laws prevent it too.
Yeah,
don't they?
Probably. Yeah. But as we wrap this one up, Gibbs, you know, I think this is a very fascinating case, and there's no doubt it's fascinating to a lot of people. You know, the guy goes viral for kind of being the hero, saving people. But then just a few months later is arrested for murder and convicted. So I think you said it. He went from hero to zero. Now, the one thing that we talked about early on, but we haven't touched on it again, and it's something that a lot of people bring up, is his childhood. Now, I don't think there's any doubt based on the statements that have been made that the guy had a rough childhood. And by rough, I don't know if it's been confirmed, but it does sound like at the very least, there was possible sexual and physical abuse. Now, what did that ultimately do to him? I don't know. Does it excuse murder? I would say no. It's horrible.
It is horrible.
That, you know, something like that would happen to anyone. You can't excuse murder, but do you have to weigh it? And I think you do. I think you have to weigh all kinds of factors, whether it's, you know, what people experience in childhood, you know, what type of mental illnesses they may have.
Right.
You got to weigh all of that.
Yeah, it all comes into play, for sure.
But at the end of the day, you know, what I struggle with is when it comes right down to it, how do you know who's telling the truth and who's not? Well, obviously, we know what he said happened.
Right.
The jury didn't buy it. And I think you can easily make the argument that a lot of the evidence doesn't support it. But can you say with 100% certainty that it didn't happen? I don't know that anybody can do that.
I don't think you can.
There was only two people there.
But I think really what hurt his case was that he went back to the house again.
Yeah, I think that was big.
I don't know if that would have been the turning point or the saving the case for him, but it didn't help.
No, I think the jury looked at that and probably thought, this doesn't line up with what you said happened.
Right.
Because why would you go back if, you know, what you said happened really happened? And then, you know, the prosecution, I think, did a good job of painting it or laying it out to the jury that the injuries were far more severe.
Yeah.
Than someone who's defending themselves from, now they use the word sexual advance, even the court did, and I would say sexual assault because that's what he's claiming. Right. But whatever it was, I mean, a broken neck, you know, facial fractures, broken ribs, just a lot of blunt force trauma. My thought is the jury probably looked at all that and thought, this guy was incapacitated way before many of these blows were even inflicted.
Sure. Yeah.
So I don't want to try to get into their heads too much, but I think you have to a little bit. And, you know, again, at the end of the day, the jury, as we always say, they were there. They sat through it day after day. They heard all the evidence and they came to their conclusion. You got to live with that until, you know, something comes out to dispute it.
I mean, I can see it being just a act of vengeance, you know? I mean, he goes through life being assaulted, you know, raped at 17, and maybe what happened that night before got him upset. And he said, you know what, I'm going to go back to the house and I'm going to take care of this.
Yeah, I see your point there.
You know, and so instead of being on the defense, he just went in there and just.
So yeah. If that were the case, it doesn't make it right, obviously, anything that happened to him before that. But it definitely doesn't make it right that you go back and kill someone.
Exactly.
Now, you go to the police. You can do a lot of different things. But if it's not self-defense, you can't go back with the intent to take your revenge. You just can't do it.
Yeah, you can't.
But that's it for our case on Kai McGilvery. We got some voicemails. You want to check those out?
Yeah, let's hear them.
Hi, guys. This is Amelia from Ontario, Canada. I'm just calling to let you guys know that I love your show so much. I've been listening to it for a long time now, but only just recently decided that I would call in. I actually live in a town where Paul Bernardo was imprisoned for a little while. And I was just wondering if you guys were ever considering doing a podcast on him, because it's a pretty big case up here up north. It would be really cool if you guys did. I know that there's a lot of information already out there, but I love the way that you guys explain cases and give your own perspective. So yeah, I think that'd be really awesome. I can't decide whether I'm team Fergie or team Gibby. I am definitely both. But yeah, thanks guys. Keep up the good work and keep your own time ticking.
All right. Thank you so much for the voicemail. We actually did cover that case.
We did.
Was it one or two episodes?
I want to say it was two episodes.
I want to say two. And it's been
years,
like 4 or 5 years ago. It was it was pretty early on. You'll find it. And we didn't cover just him. We covered both.
Yeah, we covered him and Carly.
Yeah, Bernardo and Homolka. So you'll find it out there, but it's way, way back.
Hey guys, it's Tasha from Macedonia again. I do have to address your ongoing commentary on CSIS. I got my first sports festiva when I was 19, and I had one up until last year when I wrecked it. So that is, sadly, almost 20 years. They're amazing little cars. They're really easy to work on. They get great gas mileage. And it takes a lot to kill them. So you haven't lost all your Fiesta listeners. You still have at least one. You guys have a great day and keep your own time ticking.
Oh, the Fiesta. You know, it's funny what people latch onto or what becomes kind of a running, I don't want to call it gag, because I'm not saying the Fiesta is a gag, but what becomes kind of a running trope.
Sure.
Throughout years of a podcast or a show or whatever it is, I may have to change my stance on Fiestas, man. If that thing lasted 20 years, I've never gotten 20 years out of anything.
Really?
Except my marriage. I've been married more than 20 years.
There you go. That's a plus.
That's a heck of a car, man.
That is.
If you think about 20 years, unless you didn't drive it, which I'm assuming that was not the case.
That's good info.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. It's Sam from Manchester in England. I can't believe I'm sending you a voicemail. I'm trying to actually do it really quietly because otherwise my other half, if he heard me, would say that I was a right geek. But I just wanted to tell you that I was so chuffed when I found your podcast, TCAT. I managed to binge it all in about 6 months and now I've started on Unsolved. I am a Patreon supporter, but I haven't even started them yet. Anyway, I've tried on long enough, so stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
All right. Thanks for the Patreon support, and thanks for jumping over to Unsolved.
Yeah, we love that.
And love that accent. Love it.
It's my bloodline.
Okay. I'm not sure where you're going there, but...
because I did that DNA test, and they said, from England and Ireland.
When you really thought you were something else? Or was that some... No, that was somebody else I was talking
to.
Yeah.
I had a little bit of Italianano in me.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, see, fancy.
You're fancy, but thanks for the voicemails. We had one thing in the mailbag. Ari Ansbro sent us in a magnet for the studio fridge, some Harley chips, and a copy of The Burning Bed.
The Burning Bed.
Which I've never read, but I do remember the movie. Who was in that? Farrah Fawcett?
Farrah Fawcett was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So she sent me her very own copy.
Okay.
Which I actually think is cooler than getting a new copy.
Yeah.
Somebody's personal, copy out of their collection.
Especially if they wrote notes in it.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't opened it yet, but I'm going to read it because I've never actually read the book. All right, buddy. That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. Primarily, Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.